You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Decibel Geek Podcast with Aaron Camaro and Chris Sinzak.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Decibel Geek Podcast. I'm Chris Sinzak. Aaron Camaro will be joining me soon when we get to our talk with the special guest. I just want to go over a little bit of the business first. We have a really exciting show for you today. I've been excited to get this guest on for a couple of years now. His name is Chad Lee, and he's a professional rock photographer. And he lives here in Nashville, and the guy has shot photos of so many people, it's insane. When you check out his website, you're going to see just a whole smorgasbord of stuff. Lots and lots and lots of metal stuff and rock stuff that you're going to dig. And was a super great guest to have on the show, and I know you guys are going to enjoy the talk we have with him. But before I get into all the details and all the pertinent stuff of why Chad's joining us this week, I'd like to go over the Geeks of the Week real quick. These are the people that shared on Facebook and retweeted on Twitter the link for last week's episode that we did on Hell. We have finished the Heaven and Hell double episode, and we live to tell about it. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. We had a lot of good feedback on it. It was fun to do. And but yeah, let's get to Geeks of the Week right now. Cal Hens, Brian Bates, Shane Hebert, Andy LaFon, James Brendan Dunn, Scott Webb, Howard Tate, Jeremy Livengood, Joe Lascon, Alan Tate, Todd Cunningham, Dan Miles, David Alpazar, Billy Hardaway, Chris Karam, JTB's Groovy Record Room, Scott Ollinger, Lee Maslin of the Audio Junkies Podcast, Brent Walter, Matt Severson of the Paperback Rocker Podcast, Brad Kalmanson, Andrew Jacobs, Mike Blunt, Joe Royland of Sit and Spin with Joe, Warren Money, Miguel Nunez, Derek Novak, I Am Hoops, Mikhail Burrell, Adam Cox, and Viking Girl. Thank you guys so much for sharing the link to last week's episode on Favorite Songs About Hell. And if you're new to this show, and this is how the Geeks of the Week thing work, it's just a way to get the word out about the show and also to get you some recognition for being supportive of the show. Basically, you just share the link to this episode on Facebook and or retweet it on Twitter. Be great if you could do both. And I'll see that, and I'll put your name down on the list, and I'll read out your name on next week's episode. It's just a good way of getting the word out. So let's get down to it. Okay, Chad Lee's going to join me and Aaron here in just a second. The reason Chad's coming on the show this week is it's become kind of a worldwide event over the last few years, this thing called Ride for Dime. And we're all big Pantera fans here at the show and have wanted to do a Pantera discussion for a long time. And we thought, why not have that discussion with someone who was on the inside and knew Daryl in particular especially well, and also who would want to talk about Pantera. And we could also do it for a great cause. So it's kind of a, you know, two for the price of one deal. The Ride for Dime event here in Nashville is going to be Saturday, September 27th, and we're going to get to all the details on the talk with Chad. I just want to give you a real quick rundown, but including on the Nashville version of this, it's a KISS tribute band called KISS, K-I-S-T, bands Erasing Never, Second Skin, a band called The Fucking Pantera Tribute Band, which is aptly named, a band called Fun Gone Wrong, and is going to play. And there's a lot of special guests. Nick Catney's from Black Label Society is going to be here. Nick Bocott from Grim Reaper. Luke Carl, good friend of the show. Jonathan Montoya of Slive is going to be there. And hosting the whole thing is going to be Jose Mangan from SiriusXM. And Aaron and I are going to be down there. And you're going to get all the details of how you can find out to do it and how you can also just donate money if you're not in the local area. You can still put money towards a good cause. We really hope you'll do that. So we'll get into it with Chad and get all the details for you. But, hey, we're going to talk fucking Pantera. How cool is that? So here we go with our talk with Chad.
So, that's cool. I like that.
So you are basically you're like a hotshot photographer. Is that correct?
I don't know if I'd go that far, but
I think I would. Yeah, he is.
I've been taking pictures, doing concert photography for about 17 years now.
Yeah. And you're not from Nashville originally, though.
No, Chicago.
Chicago.
I moved here 5 years ago out of a nasty divorce.
Oh, okay.
See? And I ran from the snow and the ice, and I'll never go back except for the pizza.
Amen to that.
And the occasional Slayer show.
Yeah, I live there. I lived there in '85 when the Bears won the Super Bowl, and but I do
Dumb
not
Bears.
Do not miss the winners at all.
Ooh.
Oh yeah, we almost had an altercation when Chad
I almost got back in my car and turned around. Come on a Packers jersey on Sunday like that.
Yeah, I seen him getting out of the car. I saw your Facebook post about the Bears. It's like, oh, I got to go change my shirt.
So wanted to have you on, especially this time of the year, because for the last couple of years you've been organizing the Ride for Dime charity ride. And every year, the last couple of years it's happened and stuff's come up where I haven't been able to make it. But every year I've told Aaron, I'm like, we got to get this guy on the show.
Yeah.
Because we love Pantera and we love Dimebag. And you have a real history with this band and with Dime himself. Well, let's go back to the beginning of your relationship with those guys. How did that start?
Boy, it's deep, but not sometimes as deep as some people assume. My first time I saw Pantera, I think we're going back to like 1990. They were opening for Exodus and Suicidal Tendencies.
Nice.
And that was like right when the Toxic Waltz hit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, it's huge. And I remember like it was yesterday, you know, my buddy and I get down there and there's people outside and they had their van and their banner out. And I literally remember people going, Cowboys from Hell? Who the hell are these guys? I feel bad for these dudes tonight.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the show started and there was this skinny kid with a big ass afro and a lightning bolt guitar that melted your face the rest of the night.
Yeah.
And that was like back in the days of when, you know, you bought the t-shirt and you went back to school on Monday and you told everybody you knew about, dude, I saw this badass new band over the weekend. You have to hear it. And then everybody went and bought the tape and yada yada. But that night, get to go backstage and end up having some drinks with the guys and getting high and whatnot and just had a good time.
Yeah.
And I think the next time they came around was with White Zombie. And then I did the same thing with White Zombie that I did with Pantera at that time. Like, they blew me away.
Yeah.
Right.
But so through those years as a fan, I went and I didn't know that I was going to do what I do for a living, but I always took a camera to concerts with me. And so I shot photos then. And I just kind of kept getting to hang out with the guys every time that they were in town.
Right.
I wouldn't say we were friends by any means at that time. But fast forward to Ozfest days when I was traveling with Zach, the last year that Pantera did it.
Right.
We just, you know, I was shooting the shows every night, getting to hang out, getting to know everybody, and kind of started getting close then. And then it was, you know, 2002, 2003 when you know, the Pantera was split, and Daryl and Vince were going to start with Newfound Power, which turned into Damage Plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that year and a half or so, we just got really close. I mean, it was, you know, I did a lot of work with them. I did 17 or 19 shows with them, you know, did the last photo shoot at his house and all the Dean stuff and the Duncan, and just we hung out and had a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you mentioned how, you know, when you saw him, this was the band that you would run the next day to say to your friends, look what I saw. I've always equated Daryl's guitar playing as almost otherworldly, like where he was sort of a modern Eddie Van Halen. You like, you know, people would be wowed by what they saw on stage because, and like, I put Eddie Van Halen and Stevie Ray Vaughan both in this league where you could literally hear their emotions coming out of the guitar.
Yeah. know, it's funny that you say it like that, too. And side note, growing up where I did, I saw Stevie's last show at Alpine Valley.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
But that's exactly how it was. I mean, that first show, you know, out comes this guy and just blew my mind with his guitar playing.
Yeah.
And it's funny the way that you say that, though, because I remember one day Daryl and I were talking and I was telling him about some new hotshot guitar player that I really liked and how this dude could just shred. And he was like, yeah, but dude. You know, the guy could play a million notes, but can you sing the fucking solo?
Right, right.
And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, dude, you know, you could sing the solo to any Black Sabbath song.
That's true.
And I was like, yeah, you're right. So what you just said about making the guitar, you know, talk and sing, it's what he did.
Yeah, because, I mean, I only...
He's a modern-day Tony Iommi, if you ask me.
And that's fair, too. And the band itself was... You know, if you never got to see Pantera live, you really missed something.
Oh,
because you talk about serious chemistry between the members on stage. Even if they weren't getting along, when they got on stage, all bets were off and they were just on a roll, you know.
Pretty much. And, you know, it's funny on another end. You know, the last 4 years I've spent out on the road with the Mayhem Festival in the summer with Daryl's widow, Rita.
Yeah.
And the Dimebag Hardware and the tent and the clothing and whatnot. And, hundreds of kids and, you know, adults alike come up every single day. And do we get kids, you know, from 5 to 10 years old that, you know, 18-year-olds. If a 20-year-old came up, they weren't even old enough to have seen Damage Plan, let alone
right?
Pantera.
God, that's hard to believe.
I know. It's 10 years this year. But they're still influenced by him. I mean, 12-year-olds come up and go, man, I wish I could have met him. And I tell... everybody the same thing. No, I wish you could have met him because he was just that fucking cool.
Well, then let's get into him as a person. I mean, everything I've seen has just been via video and stories that people that I know have met him. The guy liked to party a lot, but there was not
just a little bit.
Yeah, like aside from the whole wild man rock and roll image, this was a person who had a serious good heart to him. Like, it seems like he. The people that he loved, he truly made it clear how much he loved them.
You'd be hard-pressed to go anywhere and find a bad word anywhere from anybody about... I mean, like, it sounds cliche, but I mean, I've said it for years that, seriously, if more people in the world were like Daryl, the world would be a much better place. I mean, he was all about you and making sure that you had fun. Yeah. And, you know, it didn't matter how blown out he was. You know, if there was 8 people standing outside the bus, it was, come on in, let's go up and do some shots. I mean, it was, that was his, he was the life of the party, man. He had the biggest smile and the biggest laugh, and he, you know, I could talk for hours. He was the greatest, man.
Yeah, and now, how does that compare to Vinnie Paul? How would you describe Vinnie Paul? Because they're brothers. I mean, are they close like that, or are they about as polar opposite as you can get?
Vinny's a great guy, man. I've had a lot of good times with Vince over the years. A lot of them involve tit bars around the country and many bottles of vodka.
Right. But, I mean, I don't know. My opinion, because, like, the current thing that goes around now is the media tends to either approach Phil or Rex or Vinny about, let's get Zakk Wylde up there and let's get Pantera back on stage again.
Yeah, that's nonstop. And every time there's an interview with any one of those guys,
it never
that
stops.
Always comes up.
It's because the people want it.
The
man.
People,
right.
And people.
And I don't know if it's even so much Zakk as it is, you know, get anybody, get somebody. We just want to hear these
songs
hear
those
live
songs
again.
Okay.
You know?
Here's my take on it.
But you can't.
And this is, you know, Rita and myself and several other people and I mean, if they were to do something and play together. First, it couldn't be a reunion.
No.
Because, of course, Daryl's not here.
Right.
And, but if they were to do it, I mean, I really believe that they could do a, you know, Pantera remember, a tribute to what they did.
Yeah.
And what they created. And to Daryl's legacy and the music. And for the people that never got a chance to see it. Mm-hmm. But so, Zakk is not, Daryl could play Zakk better than Zakk can play Daryl stuff.
I'd agree with
and
that.
And I love them both dearly. Yeah. I mean, Zakk has been a very close friend of mine for 15 years now. But if they were to do something like that, it couldn't just be any one person. It would have to be the way I think Daryl would have liked it, is a tribute and have his friends.
Yeah.
Kerry King. Kerry King
there you go.
Can do it. Phil Demmel from Machine Head.
Right.
I mean, you listen to the Machine Head records and you hear Daryl's influences in Phil's playing.
Mm-hmm.
John Five.
Yeah. Who, yeah, he could pull it off.
And John is, you know, John's, I'll talk later. I mean, he's one of the people I cite responsible for my career.
Oh, really?
John from Shadows Fall is another one that could do it. So, I mean, there's several players that would have to be involved.
See, I like that idea.
And it would have to be a tribute. And that would be ideally if, in, you know, my head, that's how it would go if it were to happen.
Well, it would take the onus off of the person that's filling in because it's like, I'm doing this as a tribute and I'm one of many.
But what are you going to hear after the show? That was great. But you're no Dying
Well, yeah,
Daryl.
They're all going to
hear
that.
You can't escape that.
Yeah. No, you can't. And, you know, that's... But see, and, you know, Alice in Chains gets it with William. You know, I mean, any band that's had to go on through something like that, you're never, ever going to satisfy everybody. You know, if Pantera was still here, they put out music, some of their fans aren't going to like it. When Damage Plan came out, that album did not get a fair shake. That album is amazing, front to back. I mean, and people just didn't give it a chance at that time because it wasn't what they wanted.
Right.
You know,
right. They wanted Pantera.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, you don't. Mick Jagger said it. You can't always get what you want.
Yeah. But do you think that Vince's whole stance on being stonewalling about it, do you think that's really because I want to protect my brother's memory, or do you think it's all a petty feud with Phil?
He made a point, a good point in a recent interview when he said, you know, hey, dude, if you got, it's like a marriage. If you got divorced,
you want to hang out with somebody,
you want to hang out with her? And I'm like,
not really.
No, you're right. But if somebody dropped 50 grand in my pocket every night to sleep with her, I'd be like, come on, let's do it.
You'd have to at least consider it, wouldn't you?
Of course.
I mean, again, you know, when you get divorced, you don't, every person you run into on the street doesn't say, when are you going to get back together with your wife? When are you going to get back together
with
your wife?
And it's different. I mean, there's a difference between a marriage and the legacy that Pantera, I mean, like I said, you know, it's, he's a human. He's, it's his call. You know?
I almost wonder if he, if eventually down the pike, he's going to do it. He's going to do it, but he's going to do it without Phil Anselmo being involved.
No.
I don't think so. Well. Yeah, we'll talk later. But anyway, I'm sorry to stir up a hornet's nest.
No, it's all good. It's just, you know, Matt, it's just like any one of them. I'm just a small little piece in any of this. And, you know, no matter what I say, some people are going to like it and some people are going to go fuck that guy.
Yeah, I suppose your speculation is just as good as anybody else.
It is. I mean, I don't, you know. Well, I'm a first and foremost, I'm a fan.
Sure.
Yeah.
I want to see it.
Yeah.
Sure. And, of course, if something happened... Well, sure.
Yeah.
I'd have, probably a piece and a job in it, too.
You're right.
But, you know, for now, I have my memories.
Yeah. That's right.
I just, man, I... I'm...
And what we do have is, you know, last year, I was, I've been working with Rex, and I did 2 weeks with Kill Devil Hill last year.
They're awesome.
Great band.
Oh, amazing. And we opened Rock on the Range last year. They were the first band of the three-day festival. And Phil, before, I mean, the day even started, you know, everybody was hanging out. So I took a group shot with Phil with them. The crowd had no idea. Kill Devil Hill had been doing, Mouth for War, I think.
Yeah.
And now I can't remember what they did. Phil came up and they did a song together and the crowd went apeshit.
Oh, I bet.
Well, later that day, Down played and then Rex got up and played with Down.
Oh, that's cool.
So that kind of opened some doors. And then following that tour, Black Label and Down were out together. And everybody saw, you know, Zach and Phil got up and they were doing I'm Broken together.
Yeah.
A couple of nights.
Yeah.
So the wheels started going. And I realized that we, Kill Devil Hill, were in Dallas the same night that that tour was. So I called Zach and I was like, hey, dude, we should make this happen and bring Rex over there because our show's later. And a couple of phone calls, emails, and the crowd in Dallas, hometown.
It's Dallas. I mean,
they had no clue. They were. They had a good idea that they were probably going to, Phil and Zach were going to jam.
Right.
And then Rex walked out and the place just went.
Wow.
I mean, dude, I got goosebumps.
So you almost had the reunion lineup right there.
Yeah. Well, you had part of what everybody's been clamoring for.
Yeah, you did. You had three quarters
of it. I mean, I got goosebumps telling you about it.
Wow.
I mean, when I turned around and looked at people's eyes and faces.
They were just lit up. Oh, that's good. It's,
you know, I mean, people just, I think, you know, literally some people shit themselves.
What did they play that night?
Awesome.
I'm broken. Well, wait, so you saw them first in 90.
Yep.
And were you getting to hang around them back in those days?
Just, you know, as a fan, like right. I said, we went and smoked some pot afterwards and drank some shots. And then that just continued, you know, the next couple of tours, you know, I'd go down to the Aragon Ballroom and they would play and just somehow get to end up hanging out. And I always had a bag of weed on me and, you know, snifter of whiskey in my pocket.
That'll help you get backstage.
Now, I remember being in high school when the Cowboys from Hell video comes out and then the Vulgar video comes out, which was the ultimate home video for a rock band.
Oh, that was Jackass before Jackass.
Yeah, it was. And I remember watching it with my friends just constantly and going, holy shit, how
it was like
fun
Cliff
would it be to hang
you
out
watched
with
it every day.
Yeah, exactly. And like so there was, I mean, so you got to witness that firsthand.
Oh, it was incredible. I mean, the things that you the stuff that I'm stammering over it. The things that he did and those guys did were just to amuse themselves was unreal.
They were like extremists. They weren't having fun unless they were pushing the envelope as much as possible.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, you go all the way to the end with Dime Vision with, you know, Daryl and Outlaw burning the wheels off the truck and fireworks in the house. And, you know, Daryl and Vince's dad, Jerry Eldon, they call him, lived here in Nashville.
Yeah, he was like a songwriter, wasn't he?
Still does over in Berry Hill.
Okay.
And, you know, I did he does bluegrass music.
Yeah.
And so I shot a couple of album covers for him when I moved here to town. But he was telling me one day, he goes, you know, I never understood when my son bought that big, beautiful house and tried to burn it down like that.
Because he can.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I remember seeing their father on the videos, and I'd be like, how could such a sweet, gentle guy produce these two nutcases? You know,
You know, Jose from Sirius one day said, told Jerry, said, "You're the man with the magic sperm." But the same could be said, you know, for the Van Halen brothers.
Yeah.
Dad.
Well, there is a similarity there. You know, both very gifted players, and you know, like you said, Damage Plan was a very underrated group because there was still that chemistry between Vince and Daryl. You know, and that never went away, no matter what band they were in.
No, and you know what? Unfortunately, the world never got to hear, and I got to hear, is some of that second record that never was to be. That they were going back to heavy. I mean,
So they had laid tracks down.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It exists.
I didn't know they had actually gotten
whether
that far
or not,
with
you know, it ever sees the light of day.
Yeah.
You know, that's to be determined. Someday again, in a perfect world, I would love to see them give those songs to Phil and let Phil write lyrics to the music that exists.
See, that's a way they could do something without even having to be around each other.
Yeah.
And you could still produce something for the fans.
It'd be
know?
Just like the last ones they did record together.
Yeah. Well, in my opinion, the first three albums of theirs, they were fucking untouchable. I mean,
no doubt about it.
Yeah. They were just, and because I was in high school back in those days, and I remember when every time one of those, I heard them when Cowboys from Hell came out, a friend of mine brought it over, and I remember the guitar playing first, which I was like, holy shit. I was like, I've never heard anything like this. And then when Vulgar came out, I was just like, these guys are twice as good now as they were on the first album. And then when Far Beyond Driven came out, I was in shock because I was like, they didn't do what all bands usually do. They get success and they go commercial. They didn't. They went heavy.
No, and then look what they did with Reinventing the Steel.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like they were just like, screw being popular. Let's just do what we want to do.
Speaking of Far Beyond Driven, you know, we do have the Ride for Dime coming up here in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And we always have all kinds of really cool giveaways and raffles and silent auctions. And this year, Rex Brown donated a Far Beyond Driven Platinum RIAA Record Award.
Holy shit.
Presented to Rex Brown.
Oh,
he's
wow.
giving that away?
We are going to auction it off at the show.
That's incredible.
What an amazing thing to be able to have. That would look beautiful up here on the wall.
Yeah, which fit right
I've got
there.
A couple of them, you know, made to me from the guys, but Rex is far beyond.
That's his own, yeah.
Wow.
Love to have it.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
It would look good in my office, too.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, let's talk about Rex a little bit. I mean, yeah, he's kind of a bit of the unsung guy in Pantera. He's less assuming. He doesn't speak a ton. You know, he does interviews, but he's definitely not a Phil Anselmo when it comes to being outspoken or a Vinnie Paul.
No, he's not. But, you know, you sit down with Rex, and, I mean, that's the assumption, I think, because, you know, the rest of the guys did a lot of the talking, but, man, Rex will sit down and talk about anything you want to talk about.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if you guys do phoners, but...
Yeah, we do.
We can possibly arrange that. You know, they're getting ready to go out and do the motorboat cruise
in three weeks. Motorhead's cruise.
Yeah. Dude, it's Motorhead, Testament, Anthrax, Megadeth, Down, Zach.
Wow.
Kill Devil Hill. So you don't think they're going to possibly jam again out in the boat?
Yeah, there will be some.
Yeah.
I was supposed to go, but they don't come back until the 26th, and my ride is on the 27th.
And I gotcha.
I am bummed. But Rex is, you know, he's got Kill Devil Hill going on. The response that we had on those shows, I mean, we did Rock on the Range, Rocklahoma, mm-hmm. and then we did... some off days with King and Crobot.
King.
Well, I don't know if you've heard of Crobot.
I've heard of Crobot. I haven't listened to him yet.
Dude.
We played King on the show. They're an incredible band.
Crobot is probably my new favorite band of the whole year. I mean,
really?
Dude, check them out.
Well,
Crobot.
I'm taking you on your word on that. So,
the shows have been slamming. They went over and did Download and you know, a bunch of shows overseas. And the book came out and did well. And... you know, Rex is he's good.
Yeah.
You know, Kill Devil Hill closed our Ride for Dime, and they headlined the Dallas show. That was their tenth show down there this year, and you know, like I said, they've been doing Mouth for War during their set, and their guitar player Mark Zevon had him at the house, and I said, hey man, you want to play one of Daryl's guitars at the end of the night?
Yeah.
And he was just like, are you fucking kidding me?
I said,
let me double check with Rita. And I said, well, if you did, which one would you want to play? And he's like, dude, the VW Slime.
Yeah.
So we went up and got it. Dude, he set it up himself. Again, this is one of those things where the crowd had no clue. They knew that they were playing Mouth for War and stuff.
Yeah.
And then, dude, he brought that out, and they closed with Walk.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, that's another one where I looked, and I was looking at people's eyes
when
they realized, like, oh my, look, I mean, there go the goosebumps again.
Yeah.
Like, dude, that's the Slime.
Right.
Badass.
Yeah, Rex and the Kill Devil Hill guys are doing great.
That's great. And let's get into Ride for Dime a bit. So, for people that are not familiar with Ride for Dime, can you explain how it got set up and what you go through each year with doing it?
Nutshell, 10 years ago, when, you know, everything happened, there were some fans and friends down there in Texas that, you know, they do a Stevie Ray Vaughan memorial run and stuff like that too. And people are like, dude, we need to do something like that for Daryl, man. So they started it, and I forget how many bikes they had the first year, but it was minimal, but they did it.
Right.
You know, they went to the clubhouse and rode by the cemetery and everything.
Yeah.
And it just kind of progressed. You know, it was they did the ride, and then they did a concert. And I'll be honest, the first few years, I was, you know, been busy, and it was just personal life, and I didn't get down there. And it's like 4 or 5 years ago, I went and was down. We just got done with Mayhem, so Rita and I were in Dallas and took the bus over and all. I went and I did the ride itself.
Yeah.
It was August, you know, close to Daryl's birthday in Dallas. Like literally 117 degrees out.
Oh. Imagine.
And we did like this 50-mile ride downtown Dallas. And then, you know, concert at Tree. The whole way, I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to die. I'm going to fucking die. It's hot. Bikes are pulling off. And as we're doing this, I'm like, okay, I'm getting involved. I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm bringing it to Nashville where I live.
Awesome.
And we're going to do it in the fall.
Yeah. Right.
We're going to ride through the fucking mountains. So that's kind of how I got involved and started. Through the years, I had donated, you know, photos and stuff for them to auction off and use for the shirts and the advertisements and stuff, along with, you know, a lot of other people. And so the first year I brought it here, I had Soil, Chicago-based band, friends for a long time, and David Allen Coe.
Yeah.
And then I had Jasmine Kane play, and I had Angel Mary and the Tennessee Werewolves, local kind of country family band.
Yeah.
And, you know, we brought Jose down and, you know, it was, it, Nashville's hard. I mean, you guys live here, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. This town is, there's 100 events going on any given day.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
And
a lot of them are really good, too.
They are. Yeah, and, so, you know, while we do have a big rock and metal scene here, you know, sometimes it's hard to get people to come out and support shit. And, yeah, and so it went, you know, and then last year I moved it to another venue. And I mean, it's really, it's an all year job, man. Like the day that it ends, the next day you start thinking about how am I going to do this different next year? I mean, it's a lot to take on. But so last year I had Seven Dust headlines.
Right
so,
on.
Which, dude, I put Seven Dust in Nashville Center Stage, kind of a ghetto bar.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it, dude, it fucking rules.
Oh, they're an amazing live band.
Oh, they are.
Oh, they are.
You know, and they have history with Daryl and all. And we did a battle of the bands for a local band to get on as the headliner last year. And so this year, I've moved it out of downtown. I moved out to Murfreesboro.
Yeah.
At Main Street Music, which,
I like that. It's a good venue.
You know, well, and a lot of locals, people have been here forever, used to hang out there regularly.
Me.
Yeah.
In college. Yeah.
So now,
I mean, I've seen a bunch of great bands out there. I've seen Faster Pussycat out there.
Yeah.
A whole bunch.
I saw Quiet Riot there years
LA
ago.
LA Guns.
So,
yeah.
Well, the guy that has just bought the place is I mean, where do you guys see it?
Yeah.
It's completely
renovated.
Oh, renovated, remodeled.
Sweet.
I mean, it's beautiful. It's a nice place out there now.
Cool.
And so I got Bumpus Harley involved. Mm-hmm. We're going to leave Saturday, September 27th. Registration starts at 12:30.
Okay.
Bikes, kickstands are up at, of course, 3:33. Mm-hmm. And then we do a 75-mile scenic ride over to Main Street. But at the dealership, we'll be all the riders, you know, everybody that registers will get a raffle ticket. We're giving away a guitar there. We got Nick Katniss from Black Label Society coming this year.
Right on.
I've got Nick Bocott.
Grim Reaper, right?
For people that don't know, Nick was in a band, back in the day called Grim Reaper. See you in hell, my friend.
Yeah, that's right. We've played it.
And Nick also works at Guitar World Magazine, where he did Riff for Madness in the columns with Daryl. And he'll tell the story. You'll hear him talk about how they used to pay him to go out around the country to learn how to play Daryl's songs from him. But in the process, he would go and get drunk and hang out with Daryl. And you know, it was the greatest job in the world.
No kidding. I'm
nice
getting paid to hang out with Dime.
And get fucked up.
Yeah, nice work if you can get it.
Yeah. So, and he also works at Marshall Amps.
Oh, okay.
And Nick is like, he's the right hand to his artist relations for guys like Kerry King, Lemmy, Slash, Zach Wilde. Like, you know,
right,
he handles the cream of the crop over there at Marshall. Wow. So he was one of Daryl's best friends. He's going to come out and he does an amazing tribute that I'm just not going to give away.
Yeah.
And everybody can see it or YouTube it. But so the music starts at Main Street at 6.
Okay.
Got a band from Ohio called Erasing Never. Mm-hmm. Big supporters. They were out opening for Mushroom Head earlier this year.
Right on.
Second Skin from New Jersey. They were direct support for Living Color last year. And both of these bands are coming down to play because they want to play.
That's cool. Nice.
You know, I mean, everybody donates everything.
Yeah.
And then I have this new band, and maybe you guys can insert song here.
Yeah.
Called Fun Gone Wrong.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard of them yet.
No.
Before I leave, we'll check it out.
Yeah.
The show this year benefits Rock Against MS.
Okay.
And I'm getting windy here, I'm sure. But my friend Nancy Sale is a publicist out in L.A. And she's the one that, like, introduced me to Monster Energy 12 years ago. I mean, it's a company that I've been working for a long time. Proud to be endorsed by them.
Yeah.
She used to handle Janie Lane and Kip Wing. I mean, she just... All the, you know...
She ruled 80s, the strip back
yeah,
then, huh?
Yeah, basically. She and... She's got MS and she's got a brain tumor and she's done so much for so many other people and she's got an animal rescue. I mean, she's just a woman with a really big heart that I love dearly. And in LA, they started this thing called Rock Against MS. I'm getting off the Ride for Dime thing, but it ties
That's
it
okay.
in. a bunch of people come together and they put on this benefit show to help Nancy out.
Yeah.
And I mean, people like Bruce Kulick, Ray Manzarek from The Doors, Lita and Cherry from The Runaways, James Lomenzo, Brian Tichy, I mean, Rick Springfield and John Five, and they all put this show on, and now it's grown into its own foundation. So that's where I'm going this year. And I also donate to a local animal rescue here, Proverbs 1210. That's where I got both my dogs at. But so Nancy, she can't work much now, but I hit her up because I was looking for a headliner this year, and she's like, I got nothing. So I booked a Kiss tribute band.
Yeah, that's why that's I'm always excited you know? For this.
When it was one of Daryl's, I mean, Daryl's favorite band was Kiss.
Oh, so, right. Without question.
So I pretty much had it set. I got the two bands, you know, and then I got a Pantera tribute band coming from Atlanta. They're called the fucking Pantera cover band.
Cool.
Nice.
and
that's
so,
what we are.
So she calls me, though, after I've done all this, and she's like, I have this band. Do you have room? And I went, oh, man. Short of it is, she's starting working with these guys, and they're called Fun Gone Wrong. They wear masks, like, made out of, like, grocery bags.
Yeah.
They're fans. Make their own masks and come to the shows, and they call themselves the Baghead Nation.
Wow.
But so she has me watch the video, and dude, they're playing Dean Dimes signature guitars. They got this power groove biohazard hate breed metal thing going on.
So then
on.
They fit right in with the whole theme.
Totally.
Yeah.
And they were just on the Uproar Festival out with Godsmack and shit.
Yeah.
And they also are going to come down and play for free.
Sweet.
They got a 2-page ad in Revolver this month. They're in Metal Hammer.
Cool.
So Kissed, Fun Gone Wrong. And the other bands that I mentioned, Nick Bocott. Yeah. It's Jose Mangian from SiriusXM is our MC for the third year in a row.
That's
I got
awesome.
Guitars to give away, drum heads, tattoo. It's going to be fun.
That's awesome.
And yeah, so if you're anywhere near the Nashville area, this is something you got to join us on. You know, we got a lot of friends here. We got a good Decibel Geek family going on in the Nashville area. I think we're all going to gather up and go to this.
I want to see all of you fuckers there.
Oh, yeah. We're going to come out and hang out with us.
I mean, we totally got a Kiss band. They're the number one Kiss tribute band in the area. They do full makeup, costume, stage show, the whole bit. Tickets right now you can get on StubWire.com. Search Ride for Dime Nashville. They're $15.
That's not bad.
You can't beat that for all them bands and all that stuff.
Dude, literally everybody that walks in the door is probably going to walk out with something, whether it's a Monster wristband, a shot cup from Cold Cock, you know, something. I mean, you're and walking in the door, everybody, every ticketed buyer is entered to win a brand new ESP guitar that's autographed by Korn.
Nice.
And jeez. I don't care if you don't like Korn, you can put it on eBay.
Put that thing on eBay and make your money back.
I mean, dude, it's all for a good cause.
Yeah.
We got VIP packages for $100.
Yeah.
I know $100 sounds steep, but that gives you exclusive viewing to the second floor. There's going to be free food upstairs. There'll be drink specials. Everybody that buys a VIP package gets a gift bag with an event t-shirt, shot cup, beer koozie, stickers, CDs. I mean, it's all kinds
badass.
Of good stuff.
So you're really kind of putting on the event that Daryl would have wanted to attend.
Sounds like a party.
I think that sounds like something right up his alley, especially with the Kiss tribute band. That's going
to
really
Already given me an idea. I think I'm going to have to get Dan Halen to do next year and have a Van Halen cover band.
Yeah, because that'd be totally his thing, too.
Van Halen, Priest. All right, see? It's not even the show's not even done, and I'm already thinking about the next one.
There you go, yeah. Chad's in overdrive. So let's talk a bit about the Pantera, you know, musical catalog. I mean, Cowboys from Hell comes out and basically sounds like it's music from Mars or something.
Oh, it blew my mind. I mean, I think the thing that really worked about Cowboys from Hell was the fact that, like, the Slayer fans and the fans of the really, really heavy metal and also the fans like Kiss and Priest could all get together and agree on this band because, you know, it was a really, really heavy band.
Yeah.
But the way Dimebag played on that stuff was so, you know, like I said, like Priest, you know, like Maiden, like Kiss, you know, and Van Halen, that everybody that liked rock, whether you were into the lighter stuff or the really heavy stuff, could appreciate it all.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's pretty much, and it's, you know, all the bands that you mentioned, those are all of his favorites, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, to this day, you walk into his house, and the jukebox is there, and it's got just about every Kiss album up to Dynasty.
Yeah.
And, you know, every Priest record, a bunch of Maiden, you know, I mean, so every Sabbath album.
Yeah,
so all those influences are That's what was in his jukebox and he listened to every day.
Yeah, I bet you know, when Pantera came out, that was a good bridge for fans that maybe weren't into the heavy shit, you know, to be able to say, well, you know, this is really good, and kind of a gateway drug into the thrash metal for fans that might not otherwise listen to it.
Sure. And, I mean, it was that middle ground, too, for people like myself that, you know, I probably still take shit for it. I mean, in that era, dude, I liked Winger, Warrant, Slaughter, Faster Pussycat,
I loved them all.
Poison. And, you know, I mean, seriously, Daryl's old lady, Rita, the Bag's Hag. Yeah. She still gives me shit for listening to that stuff.
Oh, she wasn't into all that stuff?
Oh, God, no. Hey, yeah, to you and that fucking cock rock, she'll say. But, you know, I loved it all. But at the same time, I loved Slayer and Metallica and fucking DRI and Obituary and Cannibal Corpse. And but Pantera, like you said, yeah, they bridged that gap between all of it.
They were they were a gateway drug for people.
And if you go back prior to that, Projects in the Jungle and all that.
I was going to ask you about that.
You know, the Terry Glaze stuff.
Big haired spandex band.
Yeah. So did you like some of that stuff?
Oh, I love it.
Do you?
Well, you know, I like, you know, some of it reminds me of like old Fastway and stuff. I mean, you know, it's good shit.
I was going to ask, did Dime ever talk about those days? Like, what was his take on those songs?
You know what, man? We never talked about any of that.
Oh, really?
I never broached that subject.
I always wondered what he thought when he looked back on those early albums.
You know, I really don't know, and I'm gonna probably have to ask Rita that one. Yeah. But it makes me think of Zach when, you know, we all know what Zach looks like now, the fucking Viking warlord.
He's changed quite a bit,
and we all know what he looked like when we were in high school.
Right. Yeah,
no rest for the wicked.
You'd have fucked him.
Yeah, he was a glam rocker.
So, and he'll always say that, dude. Like. You know, I toured for a few years with Zach on Ozfest and the Mafia and a few others. And at the signings, people would inevitably always, especially the chicks, would bring up, you know, old centerfolds from 88, 89. And dude, Zach would always open up and be like, dude, who's that broad? I'd fuck her.
He's the only case where Beauty and the Beast appears in one person.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, so Cowboys from Hell, you know, has cool stuff, but it's a bit of a bridge. Is also musically with... Because Phil did a lot more, you know, vocal gymnastics on that album.
Oh, yeah.
You
know? Cemetery Gates, man.
Heresy, and, you know, he went really high on a lot of stuff. But then they dropped that. I mean, like, personally, I like that he did that on the first album.
Too. Sure.
I would have liked to have heard some of that on Far Beyond Driven, but it's just like he had that mindset of we got to go heavier. And I always wondered if he was the one driving the bus on that, of the direction.
You know, I'm going to say that... From things that I've read, and even, again, just being a fan, sitting here drinking beers, talking about Pantera. I mean, look at the stuff that he was into and the bands that he did afterwards. So, I mean, I'm sure he was, you know, part of it.
Right.
But, you know, Daryl and Vince, I think they all, you know, I mean, Rex and I were just talking about this, you know, I mean, they wanted to be extreme. Right. They wanted to go against the grain. Mm-hmm. You know, they wanted to be faster and heavier and louder and just more.
Right. You could tell that with the progression of the albums and how it just gets heavier and heavier and heavier and heavier.
Well, it's the opposite of what most bands do.
And when you listen to, you know, the official live, you know,
album.
Oh,
that's a great album.
Dude, and Phil talks about, you know, and the radio says this is dead, and the critics say this, and, you know, this is our hit.
Yeah.
And you're not going to hear it on the fucking radio, you know. That's what, I mean, they went for that, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't speak for them, but
it
would appear, I mean, dude, when they wrote Reinventing the Steel, it wasn't, you know, planning on getting on the radio sandwiched between, you know, Uncle Tom's Cabin and Spoon Man.
Well, when I heard that album in particular, I'm not the biggest fan of that album, although I think Revolution Is My Name is one of the best songs ever.
Oh, yeah. Goddamn Electric.
There's awesome moments that are great, but I remember when I listened to it.
It was noisy.
In full, I was like, there's no way they're trying for a hit at all on this one. I mean, there's nothing commercial at all.
No, they threw it out there, and it's still fucking just boom.
Yeah, it still did well. And that's the thing with them. It's like, you know, it's funny because, you know, there's the similarity with Kiss, because as far as the relationship with the fans goes, because Kiss has fans that'll do just about anything for them. And Pantera was the same way. Like, I don't know that I've ever met anyone who said, I used to like Pantera.
No.
Either you love them and you stay a fan your whole life.
I am one of those Kiss fans. I, you know, as we sit in your studio here,
We have Kiss stuff everywhere.
Man, I'm that dude.
Used to be a Kiss fan?
I'm still a Kiss fan. Man, I prided myself for years, and my mom took good beer.
It belches well.
My mom took me to my first Kiss show, New Year's Eve, 1982. I was 9.
Creatures of the Night?
Creatures.
Oh, you lucky bastard.
And I saw every single Kiss tour from then up until, what year was it they did to Aerosmith?
2003.
2005, something like that.
2003, yeah.
And I saw many of those tours multiple times, including Lick It Up, Animalize, Asylum. I mean, I hadn't missed a tour in 22 years.
Yeah.
The Farewell tour.
Yeah.
You know, I saw it 13 times because I really believed this is it. I
mean, you were trying to get your fix before it was over.
Yeah, and now...
You didn't realize it was just the Farewell to Ace Frehley.
Yeah.
That's what it turned out to be.
When people go, oh, dude, how many farewells are they going to do? I go, no, they did it. The four guys are gone, man.
They haven't reunited with the originals.
But I'm that dude now that Gene Simmons is not getting any more of my money.
Yeah, you're entitled to feel that way. And then there's a segment of the fan base that's that way. They're just like, you're not dressing other people up like Ace and Peter, and I'm not dealing with that. So
when they were here, last time they were here, I took my mom, and they put Tommy Thayer out there and sang fucking Shock Me.
Yeah.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah.
I think they call that jumping the shark in TV.
Yeah.
But I'm still a fan. I love the music.
Yeah,
I love
it doesn't tarnish what you used to like.
But I'm just one of those guys that's like, eh. You know, they gave Vinny his own character. They gave Eric his own character. Yeah. They could have, blah, blah, blah. We can go for hours. I don't even want to talk about him.
Yeah, we always turn into a Kiss show every time we do a show. Yeah, but
I have my memories of the way it was.
Yeah. But with Pantera, like the fans, if once you become a fan, you're indoctrinated for life.
Well, and that's I get where we started. That I've not heard any Pantera fans go, you know what? Fuck those guys now. I don't like them anymore.
Yeah, it's
no.
Yeah, once you get the bug, then you've got it.
I'll tell you what. This is another thing that we've noticed over the years out on the on tour. I'm sure there's a shit ton of John Lennon tattoos. We know there's millions of Kiss tattoos, but being what I do for a living, obviously photography, and then being out, you know, on Mayhem Fest, actually it was 5 years. We didn't go out this year with it, but Daryl has to be one of the most tattooed people out. I mean, I have photographed thousands and thousands of tattoos, and when we are working on Dime Vision 2, and there will be a fan tattoo section in there, I've been photographing these Pantera and Dime tattoos for the last 5 years now, and we'll have a fan gallery in there. But I mean, it's unreal. I mean, dude, there's a guy that's got Far Beyond Driven tattooed on, and I'm so Italian, I'm moving my hands and the radio can't see it.
Our listeners are loving it. That's okay.
You know, a guy had Far Beyond Driven on his head. We were out to dinner one night, and this dude comes up and he's like, excuse me, but are you Rita Haney? She was like, well, yeah. Well, can I help you, sugar? He goes, I just have to show you this. And the guy had Vulgar. And again, I'm going down to move to my leg and use my hands that people can't see. But he had Vulgar Display Power tattooed from just below his knee to above his thigh.
Wow.
And when he moved his knee, it looked like the fist was punching the face.
Oh, nice.
I mean, people
that's
are
creative.
Dedicated, man.
Wow.
Kick ass.
Dedicated.
Yeah, they are. And I've gotten emails from listeners for years now going, when are you guys going to do a Pantera show? So, you know, and I know that this one will go over well because people have been wanting to hear that people talk about Pantera.
Everybody loves Pantera.
So, we're big fans. And I saw them here in Nashville, and I don't remember the exact year. It was like, I think it was maybe 96.
Performance Hall or?
96. I think they were supporting Great Southern Trendkill, maybe. I can't remember
exactly.
Was
that with Typo and Overkill? Or?
See, I got there late. I didn't see any of the opening acts. It was at Starwood.
Oh, shit.
And
tore the grass up, probably.
That's the thing, though. Like, me and my friends are at our dorm room, and we're like, man, Pantera's playing down at Starwood. We should go, because it was a last-minute decision. And I was like, yeah, let's go. And I was like, we'll just get grass seats and we'll mosh, because we were all into moshing at the time.
Duh.
And because two of our friends were like, I've never moshed before. I'm like, well, let's go down there. We're going to have fun.
Yeah, yeah.
we get down to the box office, and you can see the hill where you go to the box office, and there's no one on the hill. And I said, what the hell's going on? And I asked the lady, I was like, why is there nobody on the hill? She goes, what was it? She gave us some lame excuse. And basically, they closed the hill off to avoid from people moshing.
People rip, and people probably, you know, at Alpine Valley, the thing was what they used to do, they'd rip up the fucking grass.
Yeah,
and
they
throw
were scared,
it.
I guess.
That happened when I seen Pantera at Ozfest in 97 at Alpine Valley.
Yeah.
And it was Marilyn Manson was up there. And he said, you know, and it starts out, and I mean, I was young, and we were drunk, wasted, man. And we're looking at the stage, and all of a sudden I see like a meteor kind of go past.
Yep.
You know, and then another one, and it's like, well, what the hell's going on here? And then all of a sudden it's like you see more, and then I realize it's chunks of sod. You
coming
know,
from behind up, you.
Coming from behind, hitting the stage. And I'm like, well, this is crazy. The Marilyn Manson stops the song.
Yeah.
And he says, hey, what do I got to do for you pussies up on the hill? Paint a target on my chest? And then, like, the one that was here and there all of a sudden turned into this show of dirt and rocks. And, like, people are trying to crawl underneath their seats and hide from
man.
It. It was amazing.
I've
never seen nothing like that at a show.
And that happened up there regularly. Dude, when I saw them open, Pantera opened for Skid Row.
Yeah.
Up there, 94 or something, I think.
Yeah.
And, dude, same thing happened. You know, I mean... Dude, you were turned around not watching the show because you had to
you're
watch
scared,
your back. Well, dude, because you're watching the dirt fly and you're like thinking,
I'm going to get nailed.
I'm going to get nailed and fucking rocks are going to be in there.
Oh, yeah, because this is what ended up happening because we're standing there. And my buddy's like, what are we going to do? I said, man, just keep watching the stage. Just stay. As long as we concentrate on the stage, we ain't got nothing to worry about. And then I was like, and we're doing good, you know, and it's crashing all around us. And I turned my head just a little bit and smash right across the corner of my eye, man. I went down is like, what are you gonna do? Jump back up? Yeah,
come on.
Yeah. So at Starwood here in Nashville, the hill is completely closed off. Everyone's in the seating area, and they're like throwing people out for dancing. Like they was like it was like Gestapo type security. So we're sitting there watching Pantera just beat the shit out of the stage, and I'm like damn, I want to hit somebody, and I can't do anything. It was like one of the most frustrating concerts I've ever been to.
As I've begun to say since I moved here, welcome to Tenna fucking C.
Jeez, I was just like, and I took to my two friends that were looking forward to moshing. I said, I'm sorry. I was like,
I guess that's the difference from Wisconsin, where the security guards are just like, well, that's what they do.
Hey, buy me a beer, and I'll turn my head.
I will say that the band was great, but Phil was out of control.
Yeah, well, that happened.
He was a mess on stage. I mean, like, we figured out why in the behind the music and everything, you know.
Sure.
He was doing some hard stuff at that time.
Yeah, yeah. Not even things that were fun.
Yeah, he was, like, half comatose through most of that show.
Wow.
Yeah, there were some bad shows.
Yeah.
I guess it's, you know, that's what caused the rift in Pantera, you know.
Yeah.
You got guys trying to put on amazing rock shows and guys that are dealing
with
problems.
Isn't it true that around 9/11 was kind of the end of the band, wasn't it? They canceled a show or something on 9/11, and they never got back together again.
No, it was like September. You know, it's coming up. We can probably Google it.
Yeah.
God, it'll be 13 years this week since the last Pantera show ever.
Wow. Damn.
It's like September 8th, 7th, something like that.
Yeah. So how close did you get to Daryl during the end times of the band? Before Damage Plan got put together, was it after Damage Plan that you got close to
him? It was right before Damage Plan that we really, really, I mean, like, you know, I talk about Daryl a lot, but like even like when he was killed, I didn't do any, people were coming, I didn't do interviews, I didn't want to be that guy to go like, well, I knew him, dude, I was his best friend, you
right.
know,
yeah,
I,
yeah, just, well, you weren't
I
looking
felt
for
weird,
attention. Yeah,
but you know, it was that, you know, 2003 that we got really close. I would call him every other day and, you know, just shoot the shit. And but, you know, it was Reinventing the Seal. I did a couple of shows on that. I shot a few of the shows when they were out with Sabbath. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we hung out. We knew each other. It just was that last year and a half that, I mean, I can't speak for him, but Daryl was one of my best friends.
Right.
I mean, I could call him and talk about my, you know, I'd be like, dude, my old lady was such a bitch today, and work sucked, and, oh, dude, I got to go see, I fucking met fucking, you know, the Scorpions last night. I mean, dude, the night that they met, here's a good funny one. The night that they got to go meet Eddie and Alex.
Yeah.
I mean, this is huge for them, right? I mean, because they had never met.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the reason was, but I called him up at, you know, 7, 8 o'clock, whatever it was, for some bullshit reason. And he answers the phone. He goes, dude, Chadley, I can't talk right now, man. I'm getting ready to walk into Eddie Van Halen's dressing room. And I went,
freaked out.
Why the fuck did you even answer the phone?
Yeah.
I'm like,
that tells you what kind of a person he was.
Well, and because at first I'm like, if I was walking into Eddie's dressing room, I'm not taking any phone calls. And then I was like, oh, dude, he's so excited. He had
to tell somebody.
He's like, dude, I got to tell Chad what's going on. You know? And awesome. I mean, you know, dude, he'd call. You call it like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and you pick it up, and you're like, "Morning." He was great, man.
I love that he still had the fanatical rock and roll childhood, you know, spirit. He truly loved music. Because I remember in the behind the music, I can't remember who it was that was saying. It was somebody saying talking about when the memorial service happened with Eddie Van Halen putting the guitar in the casket and everything. Ooh,
yeah. That was heavy.
And saying that, like, if you had told Daryl while he was alive that Eddie Van Halen's going to put that guitar in your casket, he would have said, kill me now. Like, he was that much of a fan of this stuff, you know.
You know, and I think everybody is. And that's something I learned, you know, in my photography career many years ago. The guy that bought my first photo and published it, this guy, Jack Now, he worked for EMG Pickups.
Uh-huh.
And, they bought a Zakk Wylde photo from me that ended up on the signature box. I mean, it was sold around the world. But Jack told me once, he said, look, don't ever lose sight of being a fan. If this becomes a job for you, it's over.
Right.
And, you know, as long as you're still a fan, you're going to always love doing what you do.
Yeah.
And Daryl was the same way. And, you know, not to the extreme of what, you know, Daryl and Eddie's guitar, but... Dude, if you would have told me, I mean, like when Elvis died, I remember my uncle traveled across the country to go to the funeral, and it was this big, huge thing.
It was major.
Dude, when I walked in and I saw a photo that I took of Daryl on the card that they handed out at the service, that fucked me up.
Wow.
And if you'd have told 15-year-old me that, you know, I mean, in my book, Daryl was the Elvis of my generation.
Sure.
I mean, to me, he was.
Yeah, he was.
And, I mean, he was bigger than life. And, you know, I mean, I could say that about a lot of things. The 15-year-old me still gets a raging hard-on over a lot of things that I get to do and the people that I get to hang out with.
Of course,
call friends, you know? I mean...
That's why it's great.
And that's...
Yeah.
But exactly, if you're still a fan of all of it, then you still get excited.
Well, that's why we do this show. Exactly. We don't even get paid to do this, but we have fun with it.
Exactly.
We get to talk to these people that we listen to growing up.
And that's exactly it. I mean, you know, dude, I remember one night we were, as a fan, you know, in the early days watching the guys, and they would bring people on stage to sing and do silly shit and whatnot. You always were like, man, who are those guys and what they get to do and how do they know them? And, you know, I remember one night Daryl, you know, brings me up and I get to do walk, and he hands me his guitar, and I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I'm on stage with Dimebag Daryl's guitar, and they're playing walk. So afterwards, we're at a strip club, and, you know, we're getting just fucked up. And I kept telling him, I was like, dude, you don't get it, man. I dorked out, I fanned out.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, you don't understand. The things that you've done, and if you'd have told me this, you know, back in the day, and he was just like, shut up. We're just two guys trying to make each other famous. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
Nice.
You know, and he just crammed shots in my mouth, and that's about all I remember. Yeah. But, I mean, I literally was like, dude, you have made my childhood. I mean, if you'd have told me I was the guy at 15 that was, you know, like, man, only the chicks with big tits get backstage passes. Mm-hmm. You know, if you'd have told
me Kiss show.
That I get to do the things that I do now, then I'd have told you you're nuts. But, you know, I started that way, too, when... As a kid, my parents, my mom's friends, one of her best friend's husband worked for Cheap Trick.
Yeah.
So starting out when I was just little, I mean, you know, went to school with Rick's kids. They went to our church, you know, I went to go see them.
Yeah.
He worked for Kiss. I had passes, Lick It Up, Animal Eyes. Like,
that's awesome.
This was normal to me.
Right.
At 8, 9, 10, 12 years old.
Yeah.
You know, everybody doesn't
get doing that. They're normal people, too.
Everybody doesn't get to do this. And then, you know, 16, 17, 15 hits, and I'm like, wait a minute. Like, you don't just get to go backstage anymore?
No, you don't.
No.
That's funny.
Oh, man.
So, well, let me ask you this. Pantera basically calls it, I don't know that they ever officially called it quits. They just sort of stopped.
Yeah.
And him and Vinny start putting together Damage Plan. And you were talking to him through this period. I mean, was he excited about doing this? Was he like, all right, I'm done with Pantera, let's do this?
Yeah, basically, you know, and dude, Daryl was like a chick when it came to, like, writing stuff down. Like, I mean, diaries, journals, notes, recording. You know, I mean, dude, we'll be down at the house sometimes still, and Rita's got these boxes of tapes.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like the Lost Lennon tapes. You know, like, you know, you get up in the morning, and she's just got a tape in there. Daryl sitting on the shitter or walking around talking about, man, last night I really blew one out, and we went to go see Soul. I mean, just...
Yeah.
Talking.
Oh, really?
Wow. I mean, yeah.
Oh, so he put his life down on tape.
Oh, yeah, and paper.
Is that ever going to see the light of day?
I hope so.
That would be really enlightening to see what he was
talking about. Still get blown away, man. Like, when I was in the studio with Rex down there at the house a couple weeks ago, they rehearsed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's these CDs, man, that are just... There's stuff that... Not full songs, but songs that have solos on them that you've never heard. And, you know, we popped one in, and I was like, oh, my God. For 25 years, I've known this song this way,
and now it's totally different. Wow.
Wow, so, like, outtakes and stuff like that. Because I know, I think Vinny said that song Piss was the last official unreleased... That
full
complete
song that was different. Yeah.
Yeah, I heard an interview with Terry Date recently, and he talked about it. He had forgotten completely about that song, and then when he heard it, he's like, oh, I remember when we cut this. But, yeah, he said that when they would go in and do albums, for the most part, they would write what was needed for the album and move on. Yeah.
Daryl would just, you know, lay down 100 different solos and pick out the one that he liked.
Yeah.
But, so, yeah, when they were doing that, I mean, he pretty much had, like, written it, you know. I mean, there's papers. Like, he had to say, okay, man, I am fucking moving on. Yeah. And this is what we're doing, and, you know, full into it.
Was things, because, like, the whole the behind the music thing really pointed the finger at Phil as being the reason the band just split. I mean, is that, do you think that's accurate, or do you think they were all just kind of tired of doing it?
Yeah. I think that, you know, the way from where they came from,
I think they seemed like they changed a lot as people over the years.
You know, and money and fame and.
And like we said about pushing the envelope, you know, the pushing,
you know, and
how
Phil,
far
I mean,
can you go?
Give it to Phil. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he did have some medical issues and whatnot. Yeah. I mean, you want to ask me as a fan personally? I wasn't mad at, you know, I didn't talk to Phil for a long time.
Yeah,
I mean, like we didn't before what happened. You know, I mean, Superjoint was on Ozfest in 04. Mm-hmm. It was Black Label, Slayer, Priest. You know, and dude, in the Black Label bus, we were barbecuing every day.
Yeah.
Had this big grill out. The Slayer guys come over and, you know, super joined. You know, the FYE tent was out and Phil and the guys would come by and, you know, he'd just give us this look and not stop it because we were on the other side of the fence, you know?
He always seemed, I don't know, he just seemed to carry this air of, not superiority, but, like, he always wanted to be, like, he chose to be an outsider to that group.
But, I think that was the thing other... outside influences, Chemical, whatever it was, because, dude, I've been hanging out with him again the last couple of years, and Phil is fucking a fun dude to hang out with, man.
Oh, well,
I mean,
good.
He's a great guy.
I'm happy to
he's
hear that.
He's very outgoing and funny and loving, caring, giving, just happy to be alive. And I mean, he's a good dude, man.
Yeah, just because
it shows the difference between living in complete, utter pain
and not,
you know, and the difference you're going to see in your life.
And then, you know, I mean... However any of us chose to deal with it, when that all happened, it happened to Phil, too, and he didn't get to be a part of it like everybody else did.
Right.
I mean, because, you know, he wasn't allowed.
That makes me feel bad for him in that
way.
Oh,
dude,
you know?
Terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a...
And at the time, I was like, eh.
Yeah, well, a lot of people were. A lot of people pointed the finger squarely at him over it.
But see, you can't, you know? I mean, dude, if you read...
Because at the time, you got to think, people are thinking, well, that's it. We're never going to see Pantera again. You know, who do we... You know,
let's blame him.
And who took it away from us to begin with? You know, and everyone kind of pointed at him.
Well,
which,
you know,
I don't know if that's
and
totally
if you
fair.
Go, you know, if you go back to the beginning with Down, even.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, a side project is never good for the core band.
No.
Ever. Never, never, never.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Hell Yeah, Mudvayne is no more.
Right. Which I miss them.
I miss Mudvayne.
I love
too.
That band.
Or solo albums.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Solo albums and side projects.
It's
no
good. It's not
good
for the core band. It never is.
It tears a band apart.
You know? And but so I'm sure there was lots of reasons, you know? You read Rex's book. He puts a lot of it on Vince.
Yeah. So there's a difference of opinion there from the inside.
even I was trying to say earlier, even like musically, like we said, how it got heavier and heavier and heavier. And by that last album, you know, how much heavier can you really, how much further can you push it before it becomes just noise, you know?
Well, before it becomes, in my opinion, Supergiant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not.
Sorry,
I'm not,
I said it.
I'm not the biggest fan of Supergiant.
It's noisy, man.
Yeah. It's
and,
all too
know,
far
but that's
for me.
My personal opinion. I'm not one that I don't like to judge. I mean, dude, if you're making music, good for you for making music.
Sure.
Right. It's all perspective.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, so, you know, talking to Daryl through this period with Damage Plan and everything. So, I mean, it sucks the way it ended because it seems like from the stories I've heard and from what you're saying, he was at a point in his life where he was really at peace and happy with what he was doing. Or was he bummed out that Pantera
yes
was
and
not
no,
still
man.
Doing
I mean
anything.
they were really at the, I mean at the end, dude, they were looking forward to going home. I mean, it was Christmas was coming, and which Daryl fucking loved. You know, they were going in to work on that, you know, that second album, which they were about to go ahead, you know, back to fucking knocking you over the head with.
Yeah. Right.
And but at the same time, dude, I mean, those shows, even where it happened, you know, and boy, 10 years ago, I would just never even thought I even could even speak about it. But
they
was bummed, man. I mean, it wasn't that he was above playing these places, but he was like, God damn.
But it was a big step down. I mean, he's like, I have to go back to the minor leagues now,
dude. I mean, I can remember one night we're at the House of Blues in Chicago, and they had just played this fucking amazing show, man. I mean, knocked it dead, you know, knocked it out. It was actually, early 04, sold out show with Drowning Pool and Hatebreed. The guys from Disturbed came out and sang with them. And
nice.
But this kid came up and he got to the Foundation room and he wanted to get a. He's like, man, I got my slime out in the car. You know, they won't let me out and come back in with it. Can you help me? I want to get it autographed. And it's one of those things I'll just never forget. You know, Daryl was like, dude, back in the day, I'd have sent four guys out there with you and, you know, brought you back in myself. He goes, but. Just can't do that shit anymore, man.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I mean, I was like, oh. You know, but he blew the guy up and fucking got him drunk all night, bought him shots and left voicemails for him. I mean, he was like, dude, I don't have a bodyguard and three security guys that I can send out to.
Yeah,
go.
He's like, I don't want something to happen to you. Yeah.
Well, and we're to, you know, tell them. I mean, it just, you know, I mean, they were playing in some shitholes and not getting.
It had to have been humbling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you witnessed this firsthand.
Oh, yeah.
You were
phone
there.
Calls and, you know.
Oh, man.
But, I mean, they were still having fun. They were doing it. They were.
Well.
And those last shows, dude, literally those last shows were like, you know, pickups to get back home.
Right.
You know, dude, the night after, God, I forget now my days get confused. I was supposed to go to the show before the 8th and deliver a guitar. They were, you know, the Razorbacks. Daryl had created it and done it. Dean lived up near me in Chicago.
Yeah.
And the guitar had not been the paint job yet. I was going to pick the guitar up from Zielinski's, take it to the show before. And where were they the night before? I can't remember now.
I'm not sure.
But I was going to take it, and then we were going to do a photo shoot, and they were going to Photoshop in the graphics on it later. I mean, because it was already, this is December.
Right.
NAMM show is a month away. I mean, catalog's got to get done. Yep. And guitar wasn't ready yet. So it was like, all right, dude, I'll see you tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, literally, it was that night, you know, the night of the 7th or the. I wasn't going to make it the next day. It was going to be Flint, Michigan. And, you know, we're going to go, and I was going to go up there, deliver it, ride the bus back, get a rental car, ride the bus back, because the next night, or the 10th, was a show in Chicago at the House of Blues.
Okay.
It was like a Toys for Tots. Like, they were going to play 8 in the morning, and all I could think was, how the fuck we are going to get shit-faced.
Of course, yeah.
And ride, you know, back to Chicago.
Yeah.
How the hell are they going to get up and play at 8 o'clock in the morning?
We're ready to go to bed. Yeah.
But, you know, Drowning Pool was on it. Saliva was on it. But anyway, so that night, the 7th, you know, the guitar wasn't ready again, and I called him and said, hey, dude, I'm not going to be there tomorrow. And he says, all right, man, I'll see you tomorrow. He said, I'll see you tomorrow. I love you. I said, I love you too, man. And that was the last time I ever talked to Daryl.
Wow.
Wow, damn.
So how did you get the news?
Man, I was on the 8th at a Soil show, of all places. They were doing their first show with their new singer, AJ, at the time.
Yeah.
And it was a secret show at this little place called the Penny Road Pub in Barrington. And, you know, it was an invite thing. And I knew that I was going to the show the next day. I was, you know, so I wasn't going to get all lit up because I had to drive tomorrow and
right.
2 days with Daryl and Vince and everybody was going to be rough.
You had to prepare.
Yeah. And then a morning show on the 10th.
Ooh.
And, man, somewhere during the show, it gets hard.
Yeah.
I got a phone call from a kid that ran a Zach Wilde fan site and told me that, you know, another guy had said that this is what had something had happened and there was a shooting. Yeah. And all I can remember thinking was that you're fucking kidding me. Like, and I remember telling the dude, you're bullshit.
Yeah. Well,
if you're fucking, if I call people and tell them this,
yeah.
and you're fucking kidding me,
yeah,
fuck you. You know, here, I mean, you're this is unreal. This doesn't, it's like,
right.
this doesn't happen.
Well, it seemed real.
It
yeah.
was so bizarre.
Like, it was. Yeah. So then, he got Deej, the kid that was at the show, to get on, got someone's cell phone and called me.
Yeah.
And he still didn't know really what had happened, but he knew that Daryl had been shot and other yeah. people had been shot. I mean, it was, you know, it's been 10 years, man. My memories, I kind of suppressed some of it. And knowing that I was supposed to have been there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, with the guitar, I'd have been down in front or who knows. I mean,
yeah.
you know, speculation is what it is. But,
yeah.
For the longest time, it was still unsure, and I'm like thinking, okay, so I know that something has happened. Okay, somebody in the crowd got shot. Daryl, now it's been confirmed Daryl had been shot. I'm like, in my head still, okay, he got shot in the hand or in the foot because it ricocheted.
Yeah.
I'm going to go tonight, and I'm going to go see him in the hospital,
right.
and
right.
we're going to be fine. And somehow in that next hour, man, you know, it was confirmed, and I was just...
Well, devastated, to say the least.
You know, I called Dean Zielinski. I called Rita. Now I look back and I think, you know, those guys were high school sweethearts, and, like, I call her to go, oh, my God, what? I mean, like...
Oh, did you have to tell her?
No, Vinny had called her, I had made that... I called, and, you know... Dude, actually, the first thing I did is I called fucking Daryl's cell phone.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Well, I'm like, okay, I'm going to call Daryl and see what...
It was just a reflex.
Well, yeah, but you know, I'm thinking, okay, so they're on stage, and I mean, I just didn't know. And then
yeah,
before Soil had gone on, they're getting ready to go on with their first show with their new singer, and Adam comes out, and I mean, I'm fucking... Tears are just...
Oh, of course.
Because I don't know everything yet. All I know is that it's happened.
Yeah.
And Adam was like, dude, what's wrong? And I just kept telling him nothing, because I don't want to... fuck up their
right.
show.
Yeah, yeah, you're trying to stay.
I mean, because they're all friends, and I mean, you know, they recorded some acoustic stuff at Daryl's yeah. house. I mean, it's all family.
Yeah, it would have screwed it all up for them.
And finally, I mean, he's like, he knew something was wrong, and I told him what happened. And when I said where, you know, he was like, I've fucking been to that place. It's a shithole. And Rick, I'm sorry, I'm not calling your club shithole, man. It's not your fault.
No problem.
But when I got the confirmation, man, I mean, I could still, I've never had another a feeling like it in my life.
Yeah.
And I remember I walked in, and I walked downstairs, and here I am using my hands, and you can't see it.
That's okay.
I walked downstairs, and Soil is playing, and they stopped. Like, I mean, I looked at everybody on the stage, and they could see my face
yeah.
and knew...
Something bad had happened.
You know, and I walked down and I told them, and they made the announcement. I mean, they got the hair standing
yeah.
up in my arms, man. And from that, man, it was pretty much phone calls.
Yeah, and then
next
it was
day, you
chaos.
Know, figuring out what was going to happen. I mean, it.
Yeah.
That's that.
Mm. Yeah, it was. I remember seeing it on the internet the morning that it happened, or the next morning. I woke up to it.
I heard it on the news the next
morning. Well, I saw it on CNN, actually. And I saw something like guitarist killed on stage.
My wife was getting phone... My ex-wife. She was getting phone calls and emails all night from fans that started seeing and hearing it because
yeah.
everybody... I had already been talking about going to this show.
Right.
So people thought I was there. And, you know, then they were calling her and
yeah,
it was a mess.
I remember seeing it, and I remember... I got up... Because I got up before everybody else that day, and I started pacing the room. For some reason... I start pacing around and just going, I can't believe this. I can't believe this.
Yeah.
My wife was like, what the hell is wrong with you? And I was just like, it's bad enough that somebody I really look up to, who was I used to be a guitar player in a band, never played anywhere near on the level that Daryl did. But he was a huge inspiration to me. I mean, he was a huge inspiration. And I remember just thinking, oh my God, the guy that like inspired me the most guitar wise is dead. And I told my wife, I was like, it's bad enough that he's gone, but it's twice as bad how it happened.
Yeah. And you know, having said that, you know, if Daryl would have, when it first happened, I mean, myself and then a lot of people thought that this is not, this is fucked up. This is not right. It's not fair. And it's not. And it wasn't. But yeah. In your head, you were like, dude, he was supposed to like go out with a fucking a bunk liver or something, you know?
Yeah, you would think.
But you know, if that's the way that he would have went out, I mean, dude, Janis Joplin is a legend and Bon Scott is a legend and Hendrix. But yeah. What's the downfall? Oh, they choked on their own puke because they were drunks.
Yeah.
Yep.
Daryl was put into instant legendary status.
Because he was stolen from us.
Just like John Lennon.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because if you look at like a band like Nirvana, and like musically, I think on the global scale, Nirvana is probably a lot more revered than Pantera. But if you look at it as like Dimebag and Kurt Cobain's memory, I think more people latch to Dimebag Daryl because, like I said, he was stolen from us. Nirvana, you know, that ended because Kurt Cobain took himself out of the
equation. Yeah, Daryl had no intention of leaving.
Dude, Daryl loved life, you know.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, he'd be happy to still be here making music.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, and he was so, like you said, so loved, and you can't find anybody to say a bad thing about the guy. It was like that day, the world lost a friend. More than just an iconic metal guitarist, but the world lost a friend, even if you'd never met him. He was the kind of guy that you would look at and say, if I knew Dimebag Daryl, he and I would hit it off.
Oh,
and
you would.
We'd get along so good. Because
that was his thing.
Well, that was the it's crazy. Like the Vulgar.
You felt a connection.
Well, the Vulgar video and then the Three video. Those two videos, as crazy and as wild as the band acted, it's so endearing the way he acted on those videos. Like, there's like one scene.
He didn't act.
No, I know, but the way, like, it's just behavior. Yeah. Like, there's a scene where I think him and Phil are sitting in some hotel room with like a little tiny Casio keyboard, and they're writing a stupid song.
Oh.
And it's just like, this is so cool because it's just like, it's the same. This is the guy I would have hung out with in high school or something.
Yeah. Dude, Rita has recordings again of things like, he did this thing called Coloring Book Bobby. And dude, it's Daryl in his hotel room doing three voices and telling a story. And I mean, it's.
Yeah. He was always creative.
Yes.
Yeah. He couldn't help it.
I would love to hear some of that stuff. I can't wait till the day that hopefully that all gets released where we can all enjoy it.
Yeah, I would. And you know, I'd love to hear the audio diary stuff.
She released a song last year, Twisted, which is separate from, I mean, Piss was a Pantera thing.
Right.
Twisted was Daryl. You can find it on YouTube. You can get it on Amazon and iTunes and stuff.
Yeah.
Right on.
And so you stay in touch with Rita all the time.
Yep.
And so how is she doing?
She's good, man.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, considering, you know, considering that, you know, she misses this same person that millions of other people do. Right. But I mean, as far as, you know, life, she's good. She's living out in L.A. now. She still has the house in Texas. We spent a week down there, last month for the ride, and talked to her yesterday. I'm actually sending her some tomatoes for my garden tomorrow.
Cool.
And,
that's good.
See, so you guys, that's you're like something family. I really appreciate, you know, you, Chad, and Rita, you know, because it doesn't take a lot to keep the legacy of Dimebag Daryl alive. The legacy of Dimebag Daryl is going to last forever. But the work you guys are putting in to make it so that, you know, even all these years later, you're cushioning the blow for us, you know, and you're giving us something to celebrate. You know, it's not so much a reason to celebrate, but you're giving us a platform to celebrate at. And I thank you guys for that.
I appreciate it. And you know what it is, man, is, dude, it's like my grandma used to say, she was a dental hygienist, and she used to say, ignore your teeth and they'll go away.
Yeah.
Dude, it's like anybody, when you stop talking about him, that's when he's going to go away. And if you don't, you know, you keep him up there, and everybody, and it's keeping his spirit alive and well, and that's part of what Ride for Dime does.
Well,
you know?
and the fact that it's still going, and it seems like it's getting bigger
every
year.
Dude, we have a ride in London now.
That's crazy. Yeah, so it's
awesome.
Just, it shows how it shows how enduring his spirit really is, and you know, and all these big names that are working on it and everything. It's really incredible. It's a testimony to how great of a person he was.
Exactly.
So, we're going to be out there, and you guys that are listening, we hope you'll show up with us and hang out and have a good time.
Yeah, come out
and
interview anybody you want to do. You know, dude, you can broadcast live if you want to.
Oh, we'll definitely be there recording stuff for sure. But, we're excited to hear the music and you know, just the fellowship.
We've got some surprises in store too.
Cool. Nice. Well, yeah, we're excited. So, and just give the dates real quick on that.
Saturday, September 27th.
Okay.
Red bike registration is at 12:30 at Bumpus Harley of Murfreesboro. Okay. You do not have to have a motorcycle to attend this
event.
Yeah,
because I don't.
You can come out and hang out at the dealership. We're gonna have free food and beer and music and giveaways. Jose and Nick and everybody. Then we do a ride. The concert starts at we leave at 3:33. The concert starts at 6.
Cool.
And, you know, we'll be there till 2 in the morning getting drunk and doing shots. Come on.
Well, nice. Yeah. So you guys that are, you know, close to Nashville, come out and hang out with us and we'll
I got people
we'll
flying.
Fun.
Dude, I got people riding their bikes from Wisconsin, Illinois, nice. And Texas.
Well, I'll go ahead and call him out. Warren Money in Western Australia, come out and hang out
with
us. Yeah,
come on, get you a pull.
So, yeah, we got a. He posted a photo of his car. He got one of a Decibel Geek sticker, put it on his car, and it's got the Western Australia license plate. And I was like,
beautiful.
That is so cool to see your thing on, you know, somewhere across the world. But, Chad, so thanks so much for coming on this. It's been a lot of fun and great stories, and it's really cool to get your perspective on this stuff.
I appreciate you having me, man. Thanks. And, if I can, a quick plug, my company name for 15 years was rockconcertphotos.com.
Uh-huh.
I've since this year squashed that and started a new company. It's called Chad Lee Photography. The
I
website
like
is chadleephotography.com.
Cool.
When I started it 16 years ago, and I'm going to ramble just for a minute, you know, there wasn't as many people doing what I do. I didn't know how to. I mean, I just, the name of the site came off the top of my head, and I took pictures of rock concerts.
Yeah.
Since then, weddings and dogs and animals and vacations, and I'm a photographer. I don't just shoot that. And since then, you guys are on the internet. You see, dude, every kid with a camera has a rockstar.com,
right.
A hotphotos.com, concertpics.com.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to brand me,
right.
You know,
of course.
And my body of work. So,
yeah, absolutely.
You got to the point where your name, you know, means something with the photography.
This,
for sure.
The site actually goes live this week, chadleephotography.com. Cool. You'll be able to search out any of the bands that I've photographed, and you'll be able to go through. I go use my hands again. You'll be able to search, like, say, Black Label. I mean, I've shot them 200 times.
Wow.
You'll be able to look at pictures from every show that I've ever photographed in order, by year, by show. You can pick out places that you've been
wow.
and seen them. And then we're going to be doing some artist limited edition numbered artist prints. The first three artists that I'm working with, mm-hmm. Maria Brink from In This Moment.
Oh, sweet.
Chuck Billy from Testament.
Nice.
And Rob Flynn from Machine Head. We're doing 8x10s. I sign them and number them. They sign them. You know, part of the proceeds go to charities that I work with. And by buying them from me, you know you're getting the real deal.
You're going to have a lot of demand for those Maria Brink ones.
Oh, wow. That's a band. I love her. I love that band. They're huge Kiss fans, Pantera fans. Done a lot of work with them over the years, and they actually have a new record coming out this year.
We played the song "Whore" by them on the show.
Oh yeah, that was a great tune.
That was
I like that.
Song. So Chad, I'll be putting a link in the show notes for this for Chad's website, for Ride for Dime, for and probably for all the bands that are going to play too.
You're using your hands like I do.
Yeah, I know. I do it too. So
we're an animated bunch.
See, we need to
here.
Do a video show because you guys are missing out on all these cool hand gestures.
Right.
So, and yeah, you see this one right here. But
Decibel Geek. TV.com.
Yeah, there we'll have go. To do that. So, yeah, Chad, thanks for doing this, and I appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me.
Cool.
All right, I hope you enjoyed that talk that Aaron and I had with Chad Lee, professional photographer and the organizer for the Ride for Dime Nashville chapter. We're really excited to go out to this, and we really hope to see some of you guys out there at it. It's in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, just outside of Nashville, on Saturday, September 27th. It's going to be a great ride. It's going to be a great concert. You can also bid in the auction on guitars signed by Korn and a guitar signed by Hailstorm, who just signed one for Chad locally here in Nashville recently. So, hey, hope you guys are going to check all that out and come see us at the show. And thanks again, Chad, for coming on there. Check out Chad Lee Photography. .com and all the links to pretty much everything we talked about in this show is at decibelgeek.com. Look in the show notes there and you will get a link to everything we talked about. I think I covered it all. So thanks again, Chad, for coming on, and thanks for Pantera for fucking existing. Hope you guys enjoy it, and we'll see you next week.
Those ones that stare into your soul. till you're round. Forcing you to bend. Your eyes will see the dawn of the day.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.